Let me. I think that we are going to start with our meeting. All of us, it's our last day in Parliament. People really want to go home and to do constituency work. But Mike is also correct that we must be at the policy council. Some of us must be at the policy council. And it's true that we must go. Members, our agenda for today is a briefing by Hope Prison Ministry on the impact of imprisonment on juveniles in conflict with the law. Now, the people are here from Hope Prison Ministry to brief us about the impact of imprisonment. But the reason why they are here as well is June, and June is always declared as a youth month. And us in correctional services are having the responsibility also to reflect and to give attention to this month. Juveniles and youth and children in prison. It's very much important that we must never ever forget about this and not giving attention. Members, before we start and get a briefing from our visitors, there is one issue that I really want us to spend a few minutes on this issue as this portfolio committee. And that is an issue that is really causing pain in our society. The killing of children that is taking place nowadays. Now, we are going to spend few minutes on that. We must, as the portfolio committee, reflect on this issue. Now, this ongoing killings of children in our country is not only a disturbing factor, but a matter that needs our urgent attention, all of us. You know, the latest victims, the 8-year-old refugee, Renjani, of coming in Limpopo, and the 6-year-old Michaela Rousseau of here in the Western Cape, is really raising new and fresh questions. Why are these monsters continue to killing our children? Why? The question. Some people want to provide answers to this thing by saying that these people are sick. Who is doing this thing? Yes, if they are sick, they must be removed from society. A sick person must be removed from society and been placed somewhere where he will never do this again. Remember, I have said that if we are not going to be silent, we are going to fail society as leader, as public representatives of society. We can't keep quiet when these things are happening. There's a perception out there, members, and we have raised it many a times in this portfolio committee, that these cruel murderers, rapists and armed robbers don't care anymore when they are killing people. They don't care. They are not scared for anything. They continue. I'm saying that that is a perception out there, that this thing, these people are no more, they don't care, they don't worry about what they are doing. They can kill you. Now, members, we are going to deal with an amendment act when we come back after the recess. And at that time, we will have a golden opportunity to really deal with the policy on parole. We must deal with this issue as correctional services. We must look at the issue of life sentence in the policy. What is life sentence? Let's ask that question. What is life sentence? I'm having a very strong feeling that when a court sentences a person to life imprisonment, it must be life. And life means 25 years, international. And we must say it in when we come back in our deliberation on the Amendment Act, that when a person is being sentenced to 25 years imprisonment for this type of killing, that person must serve the 25 years, and after that, he must then be considered for parole. Not before that. At present, 15 years, 18 years, and then this person appears before the parole board, and he can come out. No, we are saying that we must say that this person must serve the 25 years because he took the life of other people. He must also sit there until that 25 years is finished, and then people can think of giving him a parole, and not automatically. The parole board will decide if this person is fit to go out after that. Everybody knows that nobody has the right to take the life of anybody, more especially innocent and harmless children. We must not only express our anger when this type of things are happening. We must act and stop these monsters from killing our children, police, farmers, everybody. Nobody has the right to take the life of somebody else. Members, I thought that it's our duty to bring this issue to you, so that we must express ourselves that we as public representatives must come out very strong to tell these people out there that we are having enough, and we are going to end on these things. I see the end of Mr. President.
It has come back to the issue of a death sentence too. And really, I think that it's something we do need to reconsider, specifically when it involves children. When children are raped and murdered, I believe that the country has got to reconsider the death penalty. Thank you.
Our role would be harsher penalties. When I say harsher penalties, you know, there are magma prisons where people who are serving long terms who have committed crime are kept. They are mixed, this is. But I think we need to isolate now specific crimes. Like, for instance, a person who has raped, a person who has killed a cop, a person who has killed a child. Such crimes should be given, such people should be kept in the ultimate prison that is still existing. Now, as we were saying the other day, that human prison seemingly should be downgraded. We need stronger prisons like that, like in Cox up prisons. There are prisons here that are tougher. Such people must be kept in separate prisons, not mixed, because the maximum prison keeps everybody who has committed a crime. Now, a serious crime. So we must isolate these serious crimes so that they are kept isolated in a Coxham prison, in the selected Alzheimer's prison. That's what I think. So that they are given different types of prisons, if there are any, or they are cut off from all prisons.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm inclined to actually support my colleague, yes, the Lord Jesus, in the respect of bringing back the death sentence as a deterrent. I don't know, Chairperson, whether the 25 years sentence is life sentence and the 25 years of luxury in prison. Because today prison is no more prison. You get everything that is found for you there. Chairperson, people are actually committing crimes, you know, petty crimes just to get into prison. And furthermore, we need to actually dig the ground to know who is behind all this. Are people paid to do this, handsomely? Or are people just doing it out of their own will as they are doing? Then the other one, Chairperson, you have touched on is our youngsters in the prison, our children in the prison. What are we trying to actually put into their brain? What are we trying to say? Yeah, okay. But just coming back to the killing of our children, Chairperson, we can't take it anymore. We practice in our country to say, your child is my child is your child. But what is happening now? We have a free country. It doesn't mean you are free to go around killing people. You have a free country to practice your democratic rights of your living and for other people. So I don't see, Chairperson, that a simple sentence and then getting a remission on it is going to help. We have to very, very deeply sit and think about what is it that we can introduce in the country that can deter all these things that is happening. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think, firstly, these people are not sick.
the state is to keep the animals. They are not killing people, they are not killing children, they are not raping. It's just that it's people that do not have respect for other people's lives. What I think, Jefferson, as you have just mentioned, the application of parole needs to be reconsidered. And also, we need to work as a cluster, because some of these people get away with all these things because of poor investigation, poor evidence. I think South African Police Service needs to work with prosecutors when they deal with such cases. And the other thing is the issue of when they are sentenced. They go to prison. When they get there, they claim these rights and those rights, and even those amenities that are there, they don't end them. They just get there and they refuse them. Those are the issues that I think we need to, especially with this amendment to the Act, that needs to be looked into. And also, I agree with Mr. Fisher that re-categorizing of them when they get there. Because a person that stole a car and a murderer, they are all classified as maximum and put in one cell. I think it needs to be looked into. Those that do these things, they need to be separated from everybody else. And I don't think that will infringe in their rights as in the Constitution. Because at the same time, we also need to work closely with the human rights organization so that we don't infringe on people's rights constitutionally. But those that are supposed to be end, they must. And I think if prosecutors and investigators can work together, when this case gets to court, we will achieve this. That's my input.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Jefferson. Today my voice is very hot. Jefferson, I seem to disagree with our efforts, but we should think of death penalty. If we think of the death penalty, that means we are going to increase the rights of other people. Yeah, because even now, a person can be sentenced to death whilst he's innocent. The only thing that I'm thinking of, and I would like to agree with him, is to review the parole board to see to it that those inmates or prisoners who have been sentenced to 25 years and so forth, they should serve those term of service without any parole. And we also need to conscientize our people outside there, even at schools, that the tables have now turned around. We used to say to our children that the children must be away from those unfamiliar people. Those you don't know, you must be afraid of. But nowadays, if you look at this killing, they are being done by the people who these children know. The relatives, the uncles, the fathers are the ones who now are killing these children. So we must try to really send this message outside there that people must be now be careful of the people you know. Those are the people who are very dangerous. Thank you, Chief.
I think that you are giving everybody a chance, and that is I'm waiting for them after.
Yeah, Chief, that, according to me, maybe I can be wrong, but I think this problem you raised about this problem about the young girls who kill the children, general people, you know, according to me, but I'm not talking about all the parents. Sometimes, to me, I see some parents, they tell they cause the problem. Because as well, they really, you know, if the police go up and down, they are going to get the firearm inside the house of parents in those countries. And sometimes you find in the parents' house, some television and other things, they have broke the shop somewhere and they have bring those things in the house. And the parents are just keep quiet. Some parents like that. And another thing I saw, and you know as a parent, you see the firearm inside your house there, and you don't even want to call the police. And you say to your child, you must look, if you don't put it here, you know, one thing they'll arrest you. This is kind of thing. And then if you are bad, kill somebody, you'll find some people that are selling the cattle and always they have money to get a strong lawyer. This is kind of thing. To get lawyer. And then you are bad, kill somebody, do a wrong thing. But the parents also, they that one is completely not right. And I think Chester the also when he came, he would educate the adults also. And then also, I think we can achieve something. They give support. Some others will tell you, you find they send their children to make a money with
topic because people that are here will deal with that. We were dealing with this two, the killing of Ipilwe and this issue. Mr. Tell, I am very much sorry, but we must continue. I've given each and every person a chance to say something about this issue. I just want to repeat what I have said, that we must, when we come back, deal with that amendment. We must, it's a matter of must from all of us in this portfolio committee to look into this life sentence issue. Life sentence must be 25 years. And full stop, you are going to be considered for parole after you have completed this 25 years. Then, not automatic, but then you are going to be considered for parole. We must send out a message, like Ms. Rajbali is saying, about a deterrent factor. We must. We are going to do that when we come back to discuss it as a portfolio committee. Member, thank you very much for engaging into this issue, because this is a national issue that is not only affecting the Limpopo people, the Western Cape people, but everybody in the country is mourning for the killing of these children. We can't keep quiet. We can't say we are here as public representatives and say nothing when this type of things are happening. Now we are having our visitors here. I'm going to introduce the members of the portfolio committee, because I see that you are having a very big delegation, and all of them are welcome. All of them are welcome in our meeting. But before that, I'm first going to introduce the portfolio committee, and then we'll give over to you.
Imogen is saying that people who might come to this side, all of you are very, very much welcome. This is the Portfolio Committee of Correctional Services. We have learned that you people are doing a very good job in Palsmo Prison and other prisons. You are going to tell us. You are not here for us to come and interrogate us. You see, I'm going to start. We are 13 members of the Portfolio Committee, 13. But some of the members are not here today. Some of them are busy with other commitments and so on. Bishop Dolo is from the Limpopo province. And Bishop Dolo will listen. You hear he's a bishop. Now, Bishop Dolo, this is Spirit Hope Prison Ministry. They are praying and keeping people out of prison. Then Menawa is from the Northwest Province, Menawa. Then Mr. Mahote is from here, from the Western Cape. And I can see smiling with some of you, he knows some of you here. And then Mr. Fika is from the Eastern Cape Province. Then Mr. Rajbali is from KwaZulu-Natal province. Where's Ms. Sitten? All right. Ms. Sitten is she will come in. And the other members, Mr. Sell, and Kwasitolo, there's also apologies from them. And my name is Dennis Bloom. I am the chairperson of the committee. This is Imogen Daniel. She is the committee secretary. There's Mrs. Sitten. There comes Mrs. Sitten. That's Ms. Sybil Sitten. She is also a veteran of this portfolio committee. Now, let me first really express our appreciation for you to be here. You know, I know that it was a very short notice. And an invitation to come and brief the portfolio committee on what you are doing and your achievements in Portsmouth and other prisons around the country. I know that you people are doing a very good and stunning job in our prisons. We need people like you. Now, I am going to give the leader of the team also to introduce your delegation, and you are free to brief the committee. After that, the members will ask some questions for clarification. You were here when Bishop Dolo was already going into your briefing. Bishop Dolo was already going into your briefing. Menawa was also touching on the issue of children and respect and whatever. I've listened to them. Now, the floor is yours. It's your opportunity. Let's hear. Who is the leader? Over to you, man. Over to you.
Yeah, you can press it next. The middle and middle.
Good morning, Mr. Chairperson. My name is Jenny Clayton. I'm co-director of Hope Prison Ministry together with my husband, Reverend Jonathan Clayton. And let me just say from the beginning, I know he was the contact person. Unfortunately, due to the weather, the plane didn't land last night from Johannesburg, but we trust you'll be able to join us very soon. Yeah. So, and apologies for the delay. Yeah. But let me introduce Hope Prison Ministry. We would like to show you a brief introductory video which just gives it all in a nutshell who we are. But for our team here today, I think if they can just, if it's okay with you, if they could just introduce themselves briefly to the committee. They'll just give their name and the area where they're working in. Just say who they are, and because of time, we can keep it very brief. So I think we'll just start.
My name is Sue Butcher. I'm involved with a Life Skills informal education program.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Andre Alexander. I'm the Director of Ambassadors in Sport, Cape Town, and my background is coaching, semi-professional football, and now community involvement and also the prison.
I work with the juveniles in sections B5 and Medium A.
Good morning, my name is Lisa Wakwa. I'm involved in the youth centre at Caldmore Prison with the juveniles and focusing on restorative justice, running restorative justice programs there.
Hello, my name is Ruth Kearns. I'm from the UK. I'm actually visiting Hope Prison Ministry for 3 months. I come from a cognitive psychology background in industry and executive coaching, and I'm coming to Hope Prison Ministry with their organisation and its excellence.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. My name is Willem Wenzayer, and I'm actually sharing the leadership of Lisa. Lisa is in charge of justice, and myself coordinate the project at B5.
Good morning. I'm Pastor Britt. I'm also involved at B5 in the Dr. Soul project, and I'm looking at life skills and options to gain life.
Mr. Chairman, can I just say to those that might not know, B5 is the juvenile centre that holds the children at Caldmore, and Medium A holds the youth. So you will know the distinguishing factor there. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jordan September. I work for aftercare.
And I'm working with a juvenile at Bihar Center, and I'm the cell coordinator for cell number one. Thank you.
Morning, Mr. Chairperson. I'm John Broom. I have the privilege of being chairman of the board of Hope Prison Ministry, so we're in a supportive role, strategic role, and hopefully an accountability role for what happens with Hope Prison Ministry. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Ilse Appels. I'm a family therapist, but with the Hope Prison Ministry, I'm involved with restorative justice and family mediation.
My name is Neva McGregor. I'm a teacher by profession, and I work as Reverend Jonathan Clayton's PA.
I'm Paul Schumat. I'm working with Sue. We in the sentence juvenile, working with literacy, life skills, and transformation in Christ.
Good morning. I'm Monica. I'm working in B5 with boys from 14 to 17 years of age. I'm working with Pastor Bonzai.
Good morning, my name is Esther Jenkins. I'm working at B5 as with the boys and with life skills and housing.
No, I can see a very big delegation, very, very big, but I'm very much happy that all of you are here. To hear you come and, you know, youth and juveniles in prison is this and you people will tell us what is the cause of this big numbers of children and in prison. You are working with them. You will tell us because they are telling you, you are interacting with them. I'm very much happy that different people are here. You are mixing with these people and you will give us, because we are grappling with this as lawmakers. What is the cause of this problem in prison? That we are having so many youth, children, youngsters in prison. But I'm happy that you people are here so that you must tell us what it is, the cause of it. Over to you.
Mr. Chairperson, I think we'll, if we could watch the video, and we'll make a couple of more comments after that, and then we'll be open to the clarifying question. Thank you. We'll do just the 10-minute video, not the longer version.
Through a vision conceived 15 years ago, Hope Prison Ministry has been reaching out to the inmates, wardens, and ex-prisoners of the Polesmoor Correctional Institution. Its mission is to deliver effective rehabilitation programs, equipping inmates for life outside prison, and to reduce reoffending. Ex-Polesmoor inmate Jonathan Clayton and his wife Jenny are the founders and leaders of the ministry.
The prison ministry is very personal because of my incarceration. That I can tell them all the time, I know how you feel, I know what you're going through, but I also know that there is hope for you.
I went to visit Jonathan because I heard from mutual friends how many people that knew him was rejecting him. And for me, I just felt that God reaches out to those who are rejected, who are broken, and that God still loves him. And that is why I wanted to get to him, to tell him that God still loves you. God still has a plan for your life if you will reach out to God. God used something as negative as a prison sentence to really mold him and make him, to not only bring us into a ministry, but also to bring us into a marriage. Lots of inner prison is a lot of broken people. That is why we are passionate in working with those incarcerated, because unless someone is going to walk alone with them in bringing them from brokenness to wholeness, they will continue to act out of brokenness.
The ministry has a support center and administration offices on the Polesmoor Correctional Services property. The Hope Prison Ministry team is made up of 15 full-time workers and about 200 volunteers, making it the largest of its kind in Southern Africa. The Workers of Hope represent a wonderful cultural and evangelical denominational diversity. Four ex-inmates are involved on a daily basis, and several others on the volunteer teams. Hope Prison Ministry has over 10 different areas of service. The team's day starts early with a string of devotionals to the different sections within Polesmoor.
It is very exciting for me to drive to the prison, to be here 7 o'clock, to minister to the guards, some of them who looked after me about 18 years ago. We stand amazed for the favor that we do have in the Department of Correctional Services.
Most of the time people doesn't understand our working and all circumstances. But when both ministers, because they are with us in a daily basis, they understand our difficulties. And when they come and preach here, it revives us because they really understand what we are really going through.
Polesmoor is so fortunate to have them in our midst. Particularly for myself, I'm so blessed, you know, to have them in the management area, and where we share, then I will have also an opportunity for them to minister to me personally. And it's something that is not known outside there. They are not understanding where this area commissioner is getting his energy, and of which is through people like Pastor Clinton and his wife.
every first Thursday in the month is an awesome experience where we have up to 29 different churches represented coming in, and up to about 200 and in excess of 200 people we've had already coming in with the sole purpose to pray for Paul, to pray for those incarcerated, to pray for the management and the staff of Paul. And we have experienced awesome, awesome miracles when people have committed their lives to God.
The prayer walks are complemented by annual tower prayer sessions, where intercessors look out over the prison and pray through the night for the offenders, the victims, wardens, and the community and country struggling under the weight of crime. Her prison ministry also runs educational programs focusing on literacy, numeric and life skills to sentence older juvenile boys, as well as Bible Way and theological education by extension courses for the men.
And to come alongside these young men, especially our juvenile boys, and to give them some skill development and education and training, reading and writing, that excites them and us when we see them develop spiritually and also from an educational point of view.
I think of all the people in the world, the prisoners recognize their problems much more so than the people outside. So this is the place where they can respond very positively to the presence of God and the invite spirit.
Jenny and her team of committed ladies offer the women's section times of worship and Bible study, evangelism, discipleship and counseling.
A lot of the women in the prison are very, very hurt. A lot of them come out of abusive relationships. Many of them in prison are rejected by their husbands or family once they are incarcerated. And it's in this context that you still have to share the love of God, which is very challenging. When someone is so hurting and hurt leads to anger, and so angry and so frustrated and so lonely, that you still have to say, God loves you. Selfless ministry is important to me. When I came to Baltimore, they were the first spiritual family that I met here. I was quite scared to come to Baltimore, but I received such a warm welcome. When I came to prison, I didn't have a purpose. I didn't have vision. I didn't have anything. I didn't have a life. It was like I was dead.
Adopted cell leaders reach out daily to juvenile boys awaiting trial through devotions, sports and crafts.
We go in the morning and have a quiet time, a devotional time with the boys. We relate with them and sit with them, spend time with them, when most of daddies haven't spent time with them. Why do I love the boys? Because God gave me another chance. God has called us to be soldiers. And I am standing here because of the seed that was sown into my mind.
It is very rewarding for me to be here because I see a lot of change in some of the boys. Some of them, they see the mother figure when they saw me. They see me and take care of their mother. Some of them, they left it at home.
Yeah, basically to try and minister to bring hope to them.
Then I found hope ministry and I don't want
even the video got nervous for the portfolio committee. It never did this before. That's, I suppose, most people. If we can just pick up from there. I'm sorry you couldn't hear from the boys themselves. Now is a very important part actually that we would have liked you to hear from the boys speaking themselves. I'm very happy to say that the plane has landed and my husband, Pastor Jonathan Clayton, has arrived. And I'd like him to take his rightful place next to me with the chairperson if you don't mind at mixing business with pleasure.
No, you are welcome, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Come and take your seat here. Thank you.
If I can just highlight while he's set up that some of the factors that you may have picked up from there is that within our organization, we are Baptist chaplains, both of us, ordained ministers, and we also the directors of this NGO, as you would have heard. And we have on board, and that is what excites us, and that is why we have hope and we're passionate about working with those incarcerated. Because part of our staff, you would have seen, is ex-prisoners, with my husband being the chief one. And we believe that there is hope for them. We have 5 working with us on a full-time basis, and we also have more that is part of our volunteer team. We have lots of more ex-prisoners that I may say, if I had an opportunity, if I could have said something to your question earlier on the death sentence, I would have spoken to that by what we have experienced, that even part of those that we have on board with us are ex-murderers, ex-rapists, but they experience transformation, and today they can be part of sharing that with others. They can be part of the transformation process and preventative process within our communities, in sharing that change. And indeed, for us, our focus is on not only dealing with symptoms. We're working with broken people, as you have seen. Behavior is only a symptom. Crime is a symptom. And our goal is dealing with the root. And if we deal with death sentence, we're dealing with symptoms. And I would like to say that if we have looked internationally on that, but I wouldn't let us not go there for now. But we focus on 5 prisons, but our main focus is the juveniles. When the adult prisons we work in, sadly to say, there's some of them that have come through the system that have been in the juvenile prisons that today are adults in prison that we work with still. We have a 5-fold focus of focusing on inmates, then also working with inmates' families, particularly through restorative justice, and then also focusing on ex-prisoners, because you know the recidivism rate in our country is still very high, and so the rehabilitation process is very necessary, even when people go outside. We also work with the officers, as you heard, and we work with victims of crime, mainly through our restorative justice program. And that is our powerful focus, with the inmates, the ex-prisoner, the family of prisoner being a very, very important part of correction, of rehabilitation. Then just one last thing before I'm going to ask us to just share more specifically on what we do. Our 3 key areas of ministry is evangelism, and here we use teams from different churches, different backgrounds coming in over weekends to work with our incarcerated ones, and lots of teams also going in especially to the juveniles. Then we work on moral and spiritual development is another area of our work, with Bible study groups, counseling, teaching them, with lots of one-to-one counseling, as you would have seen. And then the third area is rehabilitation, transformation, and reintegration. And there we have a main focus of restorative justice. I'm sure that term is familiar to you.
And we'll just speak to how that deals with our juveniles in particular, and we will let our workers speak to that. We have an adoptive child program, which is a full-time program, which is, I think, what got us here today, is that you witnessed our workers working every day with the boys in the cells. And then we have education, informal education, and we've got our people here that could speak to what they're doing. And then our partner organization, which works with us, is Ambassadors in Sport, where we work with the juveniles through sport. And that is key aspects, besides our aftercare, which touches on the reintegration, but key aspects in the rehabilitation and transformation, which we'd like to highlight in this. I'm going to ask my husband if he wants to add to that before we can have of our people in restorative justice, adoptive child education, and ambassadors speak to the work with the boys, the juvenile boys. Thank you.
Good morning, sir. Just an apology to the house that I am late. I was supposed to land last night already, and they took us back to Port Elizabeth, but I'm very glad to be here. And because I also know, sir, you've got a very open spirit, that's why I was not so nervous. So you really made it much better for me. So thank you very much for that, Mr. Bloom. I also just want to mention, and I would like for our team, as my wife mentioned here, share on the facts about the dysfunctional families, broken homes, that two-thirds of prisoners come from broken homes. And so we take this in many other prisons in other countries as well, and this is a major concern. And I would like our team that's working with these backgrounds and these young boys that's coming into our institutions with this baggage. Therefore, some of them join up with the gangsters because there is no hope for them outside. And that is an area that we really looking at. And then 95% of men in prison at No Loving Father figure, as it was also portrayed on the video screen. And that is another concern. Therefore, we had discussions over a couple of years now to look at our juvenile centers and see that the sentence being open longer, because to be locked away 3 o'clock is a real challenge, where we've got so many people. We've got just about over 200 volunteers that volunteered to come alongside us and help with people in prison, where we can do programs with them in the evening. We did it once, and it was wonderful. But we also understand the challenges of correctional services in terms of understaffed, and we are very sensitive to that. Therefore, we encourage people to come and help, because I see all our people as correctional officials, as rehabilitators, to come alongside these broken lives. And then the other challenge is our two-thirds abuse themselves with drugs and alcohol. And that is a sad background, that so many of our young boys are misused by the drug lords. It is sad when you listen to their stories and how drug lords use them. Just one example, sir, is a young boy at the age of 14 stole a couple of laptops and just gave it to the drug lord for R1,000 and a couple of drugs. And he feels excited about it. He feels that he's cool on the streets. And this is the challenges that we face in our institutions. Then the physical and sexual abuse outside, sir, is another challenge. And that is why it is important to bring them into a therapeutic environment so that we can work with them. And we are so thankful for the management of Paulsmore and even of correctional services that gives us this privilege to work in these institutions every day. As you know, from a psychological point of view, hurting people hurts people. And so these people don't care when they start raping other people in prison and abuse other people in prison. And we need to look at these issues and come alongside them. And our team is working with them in terms of these issues. We have very, very equipped people on our teams, And therefore, we're looking at all the areas of challenges, because these people did not start with their problems, or they did not start with these issues inside a correctional facility. They come into the facility with these baggages. And unfortunately, our correctional officials have to face up with these things, and because they understand, and because of many other issues, we say, let's partner together and see what we can do. Then the 45% of men were out of work when they were arrested. Therefore, there's so many people that want to attend formal education, and we've got retired school principal and school teachers that give up their time to come and assist us in this regard. And we are not doing our own thing, sir. We are working hand in hand with the Department of Correctional Services manager, Mr. Nyanga, where we had meetings with him, and they know exactly what we're doing and how we can come alongside them as well. Because 60 to 80% cannot read and write to get along in society. So what do we send home? So these are our concerns. And then another concern is that even if we work with 100 people, there will always be 70 of these boys, so 70% of these boys, that they believe you when we say that there is hope. They believe you when we say that we've got an aftercare program, get along, come on board with our aftercare program. But 70% of them, their lives are so messed up that they find it very difficult to believe that there is hope for them. So we are facing these challenges. But I can say today to you, as I would like our members to share, if that is allowed, their involvement, sir, from their side, their technical experience, because they're working with them every day. And then we also have our chairperson here, as you know, Reverend Broom. And we've got Dr. Ilsa Powell here, that's coming alongside us in our restorative justice, and Lisa that's running that as well. So I would like then, sir, if it's possible, to give some practical inputs, and also our sports ministry, ambassadors in sports, is just about now, it's approved that a container can come to the prison with 6 new computers in to train our juvenile boys, and our boys, international training course on computer literacy, and that is very exciting and excellent.
There are three things to have an input. Let me first ask your image for your you want to ask a question about because they have not yet input, but maybe you want to ask
no.
There are different departments, so they are going to give us input for this and that, but if you are having a question for clarification, you are free and members. Maybe you want to ask, and then we will continue to let them give briefing. But maybe that's a question for clarification, and then they will. You rehabilitate your children. They go to
a bad environment, but you become good. Thank you. We are saying that it's better for a first-time offender not to mix with other offenders, people who are already in prison. Because once you go in prison, you graduate in crime, because you learn more in crime. But now, if you are a first-time offender, and you are kept separate, in other countries according to you are kept separate, then you are not going to learn anything about crime. It means you won't improve from what you have done. Similarly with youth, they learn a lot of crime when they come to prison from the adult people. Right? Now, my problem then is that you, these children, especially here, which is in this area, Lamba and all that, gangsterism is rife. Now, they come from that environment, and then they go in prison because of the drugs. Then how then do you, are you able to isolate them from that environment when they go out again, after you have tried to rehabilitate them? That's one problem, that's a challenge, biggest challenge to fear. I'll give an example. There was a youngster. He said that he involved in drugs, in that. Then I said to him, okay, when I came back, I said, no, what you can do, you must go out of foreign, you must go out of foreign. Taken out away from his friends, his environment, and he changed because of that. It was a solution. Now, you are trying to rehabilitate these youngsters, then they go out. How do you face, how do you solve that problem of the environment?
Yeah, I think that the speaker have opened up this whole debate. You know, our concern is exactly what Mr. Fischer is saying. You people are doing, prison ministry is doing a very, very good job. But after the release of this person is coming out from, this juvenile is coming out, he's going back into Mitchell's place, and whatever, and going back into that. But I know, Pastor, you have also said that you are having aftercare and whatever, people. That's why I'm saying Mr. Fischer has opened up the situation so that we can understand now. Because we are very much interested and concerned about after the release, you know, and before the release. You have touched on the reason for these people. But what do you, when these people are being released, what follow-ups do you have in dealing with them?
Mr. Chairperson, it is not just our concern, the pre-release and the after-release in aftercare. The whole rehabilitation process is important for us. Because of the background that I shared earlier on, of the dysfunction of families and no loving father figure as a role model, it is important that while a person is incarcerated in the context of a juvenile as well, that through our restorative justice program as well, that we have mediations. Because it is important for a perpetrator to meet with victims. But that is a long process, and the Department of Correctional Services is so busy with the policy on the restorative justice that will come to the minister soon. But in the meantime, because of the challenges of the family issues, we invite families to the prison, arranged and approved by the commissioner, and we sit with family mediation. It is this that we realize that it is not going to be easy to release this person back into this community and even back to that home where there's a stepdad, for instance. So we're facing with these challenges. We're facing further with challenges that the understaff at our community corrections offices, because it is important that we have a more, even a therapeutic approach to aftercare in terms of follow-up on guys being on release on parole, other than just the security system to find out if they are at home at the given time. And we need community members, we need more people to come on board, because correctional services alone can't do that, that we come and we need to be aware of where these people are placed on parole and what aftercare programs and counseling is offered to them. And if I may make one example, there was 18 years ago, there was a guy in prison with me. And he's a major drug lord today. But there was some time that he changed his life. And I got along with him very good for a couple of years. He was even on television with me once, a few years ago. His son just recently got into trouble and stabbed him. And he told his son that, "I'm not going to do anything to you. I know what I'm going to do. I know what I should do to take that kind of revenge." We had to place the son at a place in Fora called the Ark. And this boy is there, and there is that longing to be with his mom, and we need to get a counselor alongside him. So these are the issues and these are the concerns. Ambassadors in sports, sir. We drove out to a farm. There's a farm where a lady in Citrusdal gave them a piece of land to raise there a building for aftercare with a full program that they will share about that people being released out of the Hope Academy in the soccer can go to these aftercare places. We are looking for aftercare places. Our challenge in our country is there is no aftercare facilities for our juvenile boys other than the rehabilitation centers for juveniles. But as we know, the type of crime that they commit in our communities, they will run away from these places of safety. So therefore, it is sad to have these children in prison. But from a safety point of view, this is where they are now. And so, sir, we face with these challenges. We're looking at this constantly. We are concerned as this committee is concerned about this. And therefore, the old Red Prison next to Paulsmore, we wanted once to invest 2 million rand into that building and use that building as a center and prepare people. And we hope it still will be possible to do that, because our concern is the release into these communities. However, I must also say, we need to teach our juvenile boys and every inmate incarcerated in our institutions, we need to teach them responsibility and accountability. We all come out of these broken homes and dysfunctional families and the communities. And it is important that we come alongside them and train them and how to deal with the challenges of drugs, because our gangsters outside are using these people, and the moment they step outside, they offer them drugs again. And our communities needs to be also equipped. Therefore, we have a lady, she's not present with us here today, she ends up now helping community. Because the churches are not really aware of how to come alongside these people that are coming out of prison. And she is now trying to speak to church leaders and train church leaders to care for ex-offenders. We've got hundreds of church buildings in our community that are standing closed during the day, some of them. There are much that are operated every day for hours, but there are buildings standing open, closed, and churches can come and be a support center for that. We've got Reverend Easter Inkerman that was in prison, and he did head up our aftercare. It's his responsibility to go to ministers and share with them this great need. So we're doing something. We want to do more, and we want to equip more people for this very, very challenging task. But we can say today, with the evidence of ex-offenders that's here in this building today of this ministry, that we are the people that become the role models to these youngsters that come out of prison, because there are many of them that are looking at us and know that if we can make it, they will also be making, but they can also make it, but we need to give them all that support, sir.
Let's have an ex-offender telling us, why are people so much involved, getting involved, especially the juvenile, here in the Western Cape, especially here in the Western Cape. We went to this Western Cape, to the child section, juvenile, under 18, and I think there was 100 and that's a very serious. In all the prisons around the country, you don't find that problem in other prisons, but here in the Western Cape, and I'm very much happy and impressed that we are having so many adult people, senior people in the delegation. What is the problem? You are working with them. What are they saying? Why are they getting involved in this? Let's have an ex-offender.
John?
I'm working in the B5 section where you were last year, Mr. Bloom. And I think most of our boys, when we ask them, as ons hulle vra, waar is jou pa? Dan sê hy nog, hy ken nie, I don't know my dad. And he would say, my dad is also in prison. So we sitting in a generation where the sons are looking to the fathers, Mr. Jefferson. And I as an ex-prisoner, working in the Dr. Shiao, every day with the boys, I experience that there's a lack of love from a parent's point of view. There's no time that they make for their children. When they go back in the community, as you said, sir, they're facing these yells at them, the swearing words. You know, it's all about your mother. Every second word is about your mother. And these boys, they go back to where they start, and they reoffend against her. And that is why we are every day involved in the adopter cell, coming alongside them and teach them and skill them, and also let them know their identity. Who are they? What is their purpose beyond this earth? And so we're giving them life skills, we play sport with them, when most of these daddies haven't even said to them, I love you, my son. Ek het lief vir jou, my kind. You know? And we are facing, we're seeing fathers that don't care about their children that are even in prison. Most of people that are coming to prison to visit their families is their mothers. And the father says, hulle wil nie hoor nie, hy moet voel. And here we are as fathers being in prison, also gone through the same experience, Mr. Chairperson and honorable members, and we coming alongside him and say to them, we love you. Don't worry. God loves you and we love you. And we sometimes find that some of the boys even say, my brother John or sister Lisa or Dinesh, we rather find it home here. Because there's no love at home. And this is what we're sitting with the Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
My personal experience is broken homes. It is no father figure. The mother has to go to work to put food on the table. The children is left on their own, wandering the streets, looking to make ends meet for the younger brothers and sisters at home. In my case, it was looking for a sense of belonging. Where do I fit in? There's nobody to control you. So it comes from broken homes. Most of these cases is broken homes. Children are seeking for love. They're seeking for a place. They are seeking for to be recognized. They're seeking for a sense of belonging. And that is the main thing. And then the drug lords come and they give them a sense of belonging. Or the gangsters give them a sense of belonging. And before you know it, they join the gangs, they start to become runners for drug merchants, and they are not actually hardened criminals, but because running drugs or hanging out with the gangsters, they have to commit heinous crimes to be recognized, to say, I am that tough guy. And that is where it all starts. It starts at home, and it starts where there is no mother and father playing the parental role. That is my view, and I come from a broken home, and I've also turned to crime at a very young age in my life. I was in shoplifting involved, and for 15 years of my life, I was in and out of prison, till I met the Lord Jesus Christ inside of prison, and that changed my life, went through restorative justice, and saw what my lifestyle would bring to the community, and I had time to turn back, and now I can give back to the community where I took from the community. Thank you.
John in our program for I think about 2 years, and he went through our program, and he was very much in the business, and he had changed his life. But the thing that we found, that we find, is that it's also almost the choice that the boys have to make. And the practical choice that he made was that he actually decided that he didn't want to mix with his old friends, and he uprooted himself and moved himself to Khayelitsha, far away from his old gangs and all the old problems that he would have faced, because he knew that if he went back into that situation, it would be difficult to remain the way he was. And now he's got a job, and now we're looking to take him to England as a practical example to show people what can be done.
I'm working with the juveniles and for 5 years, and then when they come, we go to where did it start, and 95% where did it start? We ran away from school. There was an open fence. We were playing in the cars. So the detection is we ran away from school. When the education cycle is broken at that level, they're on the streets. So if we say we want to stop the cycle, let's go where they are escaping from school, because there's a correlation between the educational level and crime level, although you get the blue colors. But it is very important. There were these truant officers once appointed. If we want to catch them, if we want to break them, if we want to network, we go there and see how many of them started and how many there were more. If we can screw into that position, that means we will catch the children that's on the street. How many children are on the street? And that's the potential. That's why it is no just hope business. It is the collective business of all the departments in the state.
When I ask somebody who walks, then the boy say, oh, I know them, I know them, I know them, I know them. Then I say, but how do you know them? They all come from the Skirbel Fletcher in Eitzer. And when I go to the Skirbel Fletcher in Eitzer, then I see the same person. So, if I identify them all, they all hear, they know each other. If I go further, then we come to the dysfunctional family. And if you go deeper, you say, we go to the city, oh, he left school, 21. So the state has got the role to see, why are they not in school? Plus, the parents get grants. Why don't you take the grant away? Because parents are not fulfilling their role as parents. Now they won't understand it, but if you read them sometimes, because you're dealing with the law on the one hand, and we're dealing with, we are going in and put as the individual. What we are doing is not masterpiece. We don't turn out thousands and thousands. We go to the heart and people individually, as you've seen them. But when it comes to the general pattern of how society operates, we need the state. And then not one department of the state. We need, what do we call the word? The networking of all the state departments, the welfare, the housing, the education. Unless you have that kind of strategic, then we will forever fail. Then on the other hand, I must say also, to break the cycle, if we want to concentrate on the youth, and then we can break it there. And if we break it there, then at least we'll start not feeding the cycle. I got to a point, I asked him, that's my tactic, I said, oh, this is not the fourth time, the fifth time, then they can't bluff me. Oh no, at the tenth time here. I said, no, how can't be you, only 15, 16. He said, no, you see, I've been lying with the awaiting trials. 8 times. So for 8 times he has been in Christ with the law. And what did they say? I want to put something, I want to put something big. And if I do something big, they catch me, and then I will get right. So here's the conception, I'm just going on, I'm going on, I'm going on, I'm going on. So it needs a holistic approach on all the departments. Of this thing, unless we do that, and then also we must target somewhere. You can't be everywhere all the time. If you say let's target the juveniles and have a program for the juveniles, we go for it, and all our energy, money is spent on that, and then we can be effective. If we tackle the schools, then we'll be effective, and that means there must be more. Maybe we have been to school already. School come visit the department. So that is the avenue or the area where we can go into and catch our children. Thank you.
I'd just like to comment on the point you made earlier on the actual rehabilitation as well, if I might. Just practically comment on, we've mentioned restorative justice, and something I'm very excited about is, even in our last program, we've run 3 in the juvenile centre in B5, currently since November last year, and the recent one we ran at the end of May, we saw 19 facilitators come in from the community to 23 boys. And I think on the point of rehabilitation and kind of the aftercare and what can we do once the boys come out or the inmates come out, I'd just like to make the comment on networking as well. And to say that we as a ministry, if I might speak on our behalf, we as a ministry and as a community and as anyone sitting here, we can't do it by ourselves. And we need to network with other people in the communities. And Hope for the Ministry is actually a part of a network called Connect Network that links with 54 other organizations around the Western Cape. Yeah, there are 54 other organizations that are involved with children and women at risk. And we've seen some of those organizations come in on our last restorative justice course, one of them being City Mission, which is focusing on many areas in the Western Cape, but especially the Mitchell Tang group, and then another group called The Warehouse that are based in working in Manenberg. And already they've been able to pick up, they linked with the inmates that were based in Manenberg and Mitchell's Plain, and they are now working out, they're already working out in those communities, and they have willingly said they will follow up those inmates that are based in Manenberg and Mitchell's Plain. And so, I mean, this is really a recent example. It's still playing itself out, but we are seeing communities come on board alongside the ministry and other people also taking responsibility and saying, okay, you know, we can connect with the Manenberg boys, we will follow them up, we've got bases out there already. You know, I think halfway homes are important, but you know, we can cover about 1,000 juvenile boys in a year through the Adopt a Cell program. You know, to try and place 1,000 juvenile boys, I mean, that's just the average statistic there, but to try and place them in halfway homes, you know, we need these halfway homes when they can't come out. Yeah, but I think it should be about networking and connecting with groups that are already out there in the communities doing what they're doing, and like we've mentioned, educating the church groups and other community groups. But I think the key is to be networking and seeing, well, who else is out there? Who's got the training and the skills? We can't redevelop it ourselves because our focus is inside the prison, but we are focusing on aftercare as well, and so networking and working with people. And I'm excited to see these 19 facilitators come in from the community, and many of them are now saying, how can we follow this up? How can we assist? So it's only the beginning, but I'm passionate about this and seeing what fruit will come from this. Thank you.
Maar dat is de eerste maal dat het in zo'n groepen waar die mensen komen en worden en zo verder. Dus als je hier 25, 31, weet je, hij zei, ik heb een honger, ik was daar geweest, ik heb gehuild, ik was weer dronk, ik ben daar gekomen voor medicijn, nou, het gevraagd. Wanneer je van de airport gemaakt is, en dat hij dit bij de regering van die jaren mensen geheld heeft, die er zo mee gaat. In andere woorden, je weet het meeste van ons op de kerk toe, elke keer. Dat boek van Matthew, 21, ons deel zo net, zoals een restriction, maar ons volkomen niet. Omdat ons daar weer dronk gaan om die mensen te gaan helpen. Nou, wat ik wil vragen, voorzitter. Die groepen en de Zunakwebak gaan er ook voor die andere provincie ook om zulke groepen op bouw. Omdat ik kan ook helpen. Maar zoals ik het daar zo gezien heb, ik denk ik het alle dingen gezien. Nou, en uiteindelijk, die geest van hier bij mij ingekomen, dat is daar gekeken en het andere gesprek. En zo lekker wat ik gevoel heb dat ik daar nog wat ik wil vragen. En dan gaan die andere professor jullie zijn, als jullie de mensen kapalien hebben. Als die jullie zitten. Ik weet niet eens wat er met die dronk gaat.
my dear, you can see 1 month, 2 months, 10 months, 10 months. But as you can see the group, there's a whole group of partners, and then you can go to center. That's my question for center on Canada, the other flag of the diagonal group, like the whole group here. But as you can see,
So that when they are outside, they've got a recognized certificate, so that they can go they can further their studies if the finances allow them. The other one is on the networking. Do they work with the parole board, community leaders, sports people? Because they also mentioned sports. So that sometimes they invite sports officials to go there and watch them when they are playing and identify talent. That when those youngsters come out of prison, they can use them in their clubs. They can be given chances to go for trials and become some of the sports stars in the country. Are they doing that? And with the community leaders, because at one stage I was asked by a parent in one of the areas that my son is coming out in 2 weeks' time. Can you make sure that he doesn't come out? Because I don't want him back. Now, networking with community leaders, such messages, they are good messages, can also go to parents so that they accept their children when they are coming out of prison. And some, and the majority of them, come out changed people because of the programs like they are running it inside. So are they networking with such people, including parole board? Because I think one of the other things that I think are important is for them with parole board and the community. So that when these people come out of prison, they are accepted by the victims, by the communities, and so forth and so on. Thanks.
And then the right body, and then the team will respond to
the issue. Chairperson, thank you. I will be fairly brief. I would like to commend the work of this ministry. It really is fantastic. And to some extent, I have already been answered in the response with regard to involvement in schools. My question, however, is you obviously come across through your interaction with these young people the source of some of the problems. Do you go to that source? Do you actually interact with groups that you know are probably gangsters, etc.? Do you make any effort to actually communicate with those people to avoid them also coming into prison? And what interaction is there with the family of the inmates, to try and ensure that there isn't any sort of follow, any recurrence of these sort of problems? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to appreciate the work that's done by Hope Prison Ministry. I think you are doing a great job, and your job actually entails, it's like taking evil out and placing God into the person's mind and having a mind change. But what I'm worried about, Chairperson, is the answer. What really happens after, and as has been mentioned time and again by the ministry here, that two-thirds of the children are from broken homes. Now, I would like to know whether your ministry has approached these homes of those children that are there, and whether you have found out the background of what really caused the child to commit that crime, and to be where the child is at the moment. And also whether your ministry is actually liaising with various community organizations. We hear of various organizations, but we don't see them. And I think if you also work with the child welfare in your area, I think closely with the child welfare will be a great help as well, because they have a lot of voluntary workers. And in fact, in my area, I'm a voluntary worker for the child welfare, and we do visit homes and prisons, etc. But the main concern, as I'm saying, Jefferson, is that the acceptance of our inmates have come out by the community. How do we change the minds of the community? Because if I'm out and I'm not accepted, what is my mind now going back to? If I'm not accepted in my community because of my previous convictions, then I might as well do something and go back. This kind of a thing that plays when you interview these children. So, Jefferson, I'm happy that you have mentioned of networking with various departments in the government, and also the organization in the community. And I think if we set up various centers that have been mentioned by one of the speakers earlier in various provinces, in the community, in the areas, and I think our children start seeing now there is some concern about us. So we're going to change. But they don't know where to go. They don't know really where to go. Like our homes are flooded with these kind of people over the weekends. We have to explain them, go to the child welfare, go to that center, and go to that center for help. Because I'm one person, I will never open my door and give a child that's begging in the street because I am encouraging the child. I might as well explain to the child that you are, what you are doing is wrong. If you give one, tomorrow you find 10, the same stuff. So I think we all need to get together and start working together. Thank you very much. Oh yes, there's one last one. I just want to know from the ministry that ever since we have taken up this very great challenge in your ministry, how do you see the progress? Have you made any progress in where our children has been rehabilitated and transformed to say when they came out? Did you get anyone going back, or have you kept them out of prison and worked for them? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just to commend for the good work that the group is doing. And my question is, I hear that you are on a full-time basis, right? Also, who's paying you to be on full-time? What means you are there from Monday to Sunday, from 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock up to the knock of 10. So, who's really taking good care of you financially? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, sir. I'm definitely going to ask our team to respond to some of these questions. So I just want to start with the first one, and then I will just indicate who I would like to mention answers on these questions. But today, sir, it's a very historical day for us as a ministry. In terms of working for so many years at Paul Smalls, we never realized that there will be an outcry from other correctional facilities in the Western Cape and even outside the Western Cape of the concept of come and help. We do get a lot of requests to come and help other institutions. However, Paul Small is keeping all of us very, very busy, extremely busy.
Tell us why.
Because there are so much individual needs that we have to reach out to these people. There are so many deep-rooted issues that we need to deal with that I can personally only diarize 40% of my day in terms of things that needs to be done. The other 60% is running around and looking at challenges in terms of inmates and even correctional officials, because we're coming alongside them as well. And Paul Small keeps us busy, but it is exciting to be involved in that. However, we are now listening to the outcry of other correctional facilities, other management areas, and we now started to invite people from other prisons to come to Paulsmoor for training. So we started with restorative justice training, and people can come and observe what we're doing, and they can take it back with them. We have even two people from KwaZulu-Natal, Durban Vestal, that was here on our training course and our practical course as well. And they're taking this program back to KwaZulu-Natal as well. So we are now in our almost fifth year in our strategic plan, where we said we first wanted to see Paulsmoor from a spiritual point of view in order so that we can then reach out to other people. Therefore, I say that it is a historical day for us that we can come and share this ministry and what God is busy doing in the lives of people in the presence of the portfolio committee. So then the other question in terms of the problems of our people and of the families that we're placing them. We're working in a system of retributive justice where there's a punishment. And people come into a prison facility and we don't want to see further punishment. We want to see a restorative approach. It is in these times that we meet up with family members in our mediations, as I mentioned earlier, that we come alongside them and even to identify the absence of the father figure. But we are very, very aware of the fact that we always call it pit sonder water. There's a prison in pit sonder water and there's nothing going on there. Why don't we go there? We want now to invest in people to come to Paulsmoor and to get that official training and take it with him. And so we're looking at that. In terms of the aftercare networking, Lisa mentioned that already, but I just want Paul Juma to mention about the education with Sue Butcher in terms of the ABET program, and also I would like Easter just to mention his involvement with the parole board, especially the community corrections. We are involved with the parole boards, and Easter just to mention what his role is in the community with Joy Bell. And sir, I would like just to mention the problems in our communities that John can just maybe share, that personally myself and him is involved on a Tuesday in Athlow area, a drug-infected, gang-infected community where he will go, and we don't do it anymore until some incident where he had prison clothes on, and it was not because of his incident, but he walked and then he walked to the hall and gangsters followed him and then we talked to him. So we're doing something in the community. John can share that. And then also I would like Dr. Ilsa just to mention about she's also a family therapist. In her view of coming into the prison and to see what we are doing, if we are really touching the hearts of people inside and that. And then I would like our Reverend John Broom to mention about where do this money come from that we that makes it possible for us to be here.
If it is not going to interfere in the running of your organization, then you are free to consider that, because we know that there's donor funds from somewhere.
We got an open policy, sir.
Thanks.
Open policy.
On the education, we work together with the school, there's a school at Paulsmoor, and we work in networking with them. Of course, in some instances they cannot take the illiterate inmates because of the lack of teachers, and they pass these illiterate or semi-illiterate inmates down to us, and we take those boys. But I must say that we are not doing it on a formal basis. We are doing it on an informal basis, although we have the ABET, we're following the ABET course and the new syllabus. But the difficulty is that when we get someone 18, 19, 20 years or 21, then he passes to another section of the prison. So it is a small, we're doing a very small kind of education, but we're stimulating it so that after when they release, they can study it. So that is what we are doing in terms of the education. So I mean, people come in there, they cannot read the Bible, and then afterwards they can read. And that is a liberating factor, to read, and so I can read. And I can show you that that boy will not turn back to gangsterism.
Sir, we working on a Tuesday evening, we're working in Bridgetown, that's in Athlone, where it's quite infected with young people that are engaged in drugs, in prostitution. We've noticed teenage pregnancies on a high scale, and we as people that has been there, we come alongside them. And we share with them their challenge and our challenges that we also face. And also, we're not only preaching to them, the Honorable Sir, but we also are practical involved in their lives. And that is spending time with them. And I think that is the secret of it all, by spending time with young people. And I've got a 16-year-old girl. When I went to prison, I didn't have the opportunity to see her for 7.5 years. But since I came out 2000, I realized my role within the family as a father and also a husband. So what I always say to the boys that I work with, that rehabilitation starts at home. And the other terminology that I use is, whatever decision that you make in life, that will indeed determine your future. So, what I also would like to see when we're working with juveniles in prison, sir, I would like to see also correctional officers, that I'm saying this in a very humble spirit, that correctional officers should also go to do child and youth care, to do the practice. Because myself and Monica was also working with me in the cells. We, on every Thursday, we're going to the NSCCW, the National Association of Child and Youth Care Practice, and we this is now our third year, and we try to bring home to the boys, not in a vulgar way, but a developmental approach that we would like to see growth within the children, not only in our community, but also within the prison facility. And that is how we sit with people. We also do a Nova Park weekends, and we go in the gangster area, we go to the Americans, we go to the Laughing Boys. We share with them what happened to us while we were in prison, and also to abstain from crime, and also ways and means how to stay away from the wrong influences. So that is basically what we involved with the Honorable Sir, and I'm very, very glad to speak to people that would like to partner with us in this venture. Thank you very much.
It is my responsibility and the sister that spoke just now, Joybell, regarding the aftercare. Aftercare is one of our very challenging coming out of prison, got nowhere to go to, you've been inside. You have rehab, you have accepted the Lord into your life, coming out, no place to go to. There are some times when I go on my visitation to some of the guys where they tell me Easter, I prefer coming back to prison, because nobody wants to give me the opportunity to show to them that I have changed. As far as jobs are concerned, that is also a very challenging thing, but we can say thank you to our Lord that there are people around us that do offer to the ex-prisoners work where they can go and become self-supportive. We also have a problem of placing them sometimes. There are a lot of them coming out of prison and they got nowhere to go to because the parents don't want them or the parents is not around anymore. And then we, as the prison ministry, try our utmost best to put them into a place. Sometimes we are forced to put them into the night shelters, which we are not happy doing that, because at these night shelters sometimes also wrong thing goes on. But sometimes we just put them there on a temporary basis where we will be there for them and we pay their support for them while they're at the night shelter. So the community on the outside, our communities, we got to educate them. Our churches on the outside, not all of them, but there is a lot of them that turn the back towards our people coming out of prison. Sad to say it, sounds very harsh, but it is the truth that our churches don't want to accept our people sometimes into the community. So we as a ministry, yes, we still have to do a little bit more regarding educating and going out, as Reverend Clayton has said, that we got one of our people, Margaret Ferguson, that who's working on the outside and trying to educate and telling the churches what to do regarding our aftercare. So we also have gatherings regarding them coming together. I know the ladies have a gathering for the people of hope outside, as we call them. Every month they have a gathering, and presently making use of the Baptist Church in Mowbray, where we use their church hall every month, where we reach out to them and where they come together so that they can inspire each other and tell each other what God has done in their lives. And then we also have every quarter come together where the men and the ladies come together, and then we also share and we have some person to talk to them again about their spiritual life. And then also once a year we have in November, we also have a dinner where we give to our ex-prisoners, inviting them and the families to come and to come and share with us and just be themselves, so that we can see what others, show to others what God has done in our lives. So yes, basically the aftercare is there to reach out. As I said, very challenging at the present moment. We're working in close cooperation with the correctional services, where people that come out on parole and we want to place them into work, we first liaise with them. We got an instance now where we want to send somebody wants to go, he's released on parole and he wants to go to Port Elizabeth, and we as a ministry, we try to liaise and help him and through the correctional service to give him the permission to go wherever he needs to go at that moment in time. So that is basically how we try to be of assistance to our ex-prisoners. But our biggest challenge is putting them into a place of safety.
Thank you very much. Pastor, I was informed now by the secretary that at this venue, by 12:45, another committee will come in here and lead this venue at 12:45. So if your team is responding, then we are going to give them a chance, but then we must also wrap up the meeting because other people, the other committees must come here, otherwise they are going to put us in prison. You people will be able to see
us. We'll be there for you, sir.
Sorry, sir. In answer to, I would just like to give our ambassadors, there's a part of the question that was asked of our connection and network of sports bodies and getting the boys after release into playing soccer. So I think our ambassador's team could just answer that. Thank you.
Whose cell phone is that?
No, I understand if it is yours. Because the prison has no telephone. No, I understand. If it was a journalist or a visitor, then you can. But you as a, yeah, I understand.
Thank you, Jenny. If I could respond, it's again a privilege to be able to be one of the partners of Hope for the last 7 years. Ambassadors in Sport has been established in Cape Town in 2001, and so it's been a privilege to be able to serve the Hope prison ministry in terms of sports. And because of us being a soccer organization, that's specifically what we've done over the last 5 years. The last 2 years we established an academy called the Juvenile Academy, B4 and B5. And most recently, important, the medium A section, of which we've had the privilege of being able to take 25 boys, a maximum of 25 boys out of each of those cells, and then give them unique development around football skills in training, and then life skills, particularly around teamwork, adding values in terms of our training, and then adding the biblical principles, which we believe as a Christian organization we're compelled by God through His love to be able to extend that to the boys. And I listened to Dinesh earlier about a young man who came in as a gangster name called Noi Noi, and eventually left as John. In terms of his total rehabilitation after 18 months, he had then been able to be placed in a particular church. So the question relating to how does Ambassador in Sport and Hope network with and partner with people outside is through Hub churches. We call them Hub churches. We have community workers who are placed in all of the communities around the Western Cape, and if a particular boy comes out of a particular suburb, and in the case of Noi Noi, it was Khayelitsha, he was placed with the Way of Life Church, and right now we have a gentleman by the name of Juju who actually works with these boys specifically on the Tuesday, busy with the rehabilitation. So Noi Noi, John now, is actually working full-time, plays on the church team as a footballer, and has the opportunity to come to join Ambassadors in Sports full-time academy, of which we're busy in the process of establishing. As you can understand, we're only babies in the ministry, 7 years old, so the lifestyle of an academy and boys coming out of prison, the opportunity around professional football is certainly an aspect. We provide an opportunity where they can get down to the IXs, the Santos of the world, and even in terms of Johannesburg, we have professional players there. Just to cite then, the partnerships that we have developed in terms of the UK, we get a lot of trust funds provided for our work in the prison. People are asking about how we support the ministry, and we have 5 full-time people in there Monday to Friday. We get trust funds from the UK, and one of our patrons is a gentleman by the name of Lee Sharp, the ex-Manchester United footballer. He has graciously donated a few pounds to the ministry, in whom we are able to make sure that these young men are out there every day of the week, ministering to these boys in a holistic way. So John is one of the boys who are privileged to go and share his story as early as September this year in the United Kingdom to those very trust funds and churches that have donated over the last 5 or 6 years to the football ministry within the prison. So the opportunity in terms of football, professional football, is there, but we've seen the value-based program that has been provided within the prison is transforming the footballer. So if we look at our Bafana team now, if we add the life skills and the values into our professional players, I believe that we could possibly win the 2014 World Cup, maybe not the 2010. But because we're developing the life skills and the values that are applied to the boys, they will become true professionals, and they'll have far more and greater opportunities in our communities than what they're currently facing. So we are pioneering work. We're establishing modules and models of ministry, and one of them is an academy within the prison. The second thing is training is very much on our heart. We're passionate about training, and we call it TRIP, training, resourcing, equipping the coaches, the churches, and the community leaders in terms of holistic development. And so presently we've established a Poetic Crow training community that's just outside of Athlone, as well as in Heidelberg. And we recently now just spoke to a club in Hanover Park that wants to take some of the models that we are using in terms of training and development and utilizing that within the ministry. So if they come out, the first thing we do is we find a church for them, which is called the Safe Haven in our terms. And a lot of the churches are now starting to receive these boys. With a little bit of skepticism,
we are giving them, we are vouching for the boys in terms of their character,
their transformation, and in fact what has actually transpired over the number of years that they've been in prison. And then the second thing would be to be able to place them on teams, either in their community, so in terms of ambassadors and sports, who would now start to get themselves involved, which is in the community. We're speaking to the poverty, the drug situation, and as Pastor Kirsten said earlier, some of the boys are actually going to the prison
program on a Tuesday to be rehabbed in terms of their drug concerns. So in terms of holistic development, we provide the service too. Well, now we tried establishing it in the ladies section as well, because we have two senior ladies teams, and we actually have ladies ministering to ladies, which for us is a very effective tool in terms of the rehabilitation process through sport. So if that answers your question, sir, in terms of just what ambassadors are doing, let us just say in terms of our long-term goal, 2010 and beyond, we are wanting to train community leaders in every province by 2010 and have at least a representation in every province. And then in terms of the prisons, having this type of model being presented to every correctional service that is around in the South African hemisphere at this particular moment in time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Any other person who wants to contribute, but it must be short.
Okay.
We are running very, very late.
I just want to, if I may, just quickly follow up on the family, the need for family mediation. I think we've spoken a lot about the broken families that lead to a lot of the people actually falling into a life of crime. And I've been privileged to be part of a couple of family mediations that have followed on from the restorative justice program. And I really believe just seeing the treasures and the reconnection and the healing of both emotional and relationship wounds within this process, I really believe that actually should be an extension of the idea of correctional services, that correctional services should also be extended to trying to heal some of those relational wounds between families, and that each inmate should have the opportunity to have a mediation with their families prior to their release, because I think that will also help facilitate their reintegration once they are released. And at the moment, just within the ministry, we are doing the best we can, but there's so many inmates, we're very under resourced in terms of our human resources and just time and everything that it takes to facilitate the mediation. So I think if it could come from the committee, if anything in their power to try, and also from the correctional services side, see the importance of this and do whatever you can from your side to open the pathways for more family access to the inmates and also for more mediation.
I think the closing remarks.
Chairperson, somebody asked where the money comes from. You will have gathered, I'm sure, that this incredible ministry is done by people who have a passion, by people whose hearts are being filled with compassion, and that's because whether they've been inside like some of these other Johns around me or outside like me, we were all once prisoners to self-centeredness and to sin. And Christ has transformed our lives. And because of that, we have a passion for those who need this good news. And I think that's basically what drives these people. They're not here for the paycheck. What you see here is the power of volunteerism. What you see here also is the power of the church. And if we were supposed to be the light of the world and the salt of the earth, would only be that in society. And here you have an embryo or a microcosm of what the church ought to be. And that's really what drives this ministry and these people. But we're so grateful for those who raise support for their ministries and also those who donate support. Our support has largely come from the UK and from the USA. But we have reached a point now where we're having to raise our own support within South Africa, and that's the challenge we're facing at the moment. And so as Jonathan Clayton has said, we have an open policy, but it would be wonderful if we could see just a networking of resources as well because together we can face this challenge, and together we can conquer this challenge. But the challenge of the sick society, and we've got to get to the cause of the sick society, and the more we can do that, the more we'll empty our prisons. Thank you.
So the closing remark is this: we are standing amazed today with the time that the portfolio committee gave us to share. A favorite verse that I want to mention today in a song: it is no secret what God can do. And that is important for us to go into our correctional facilities, to go and share that good news with them, because of a no hope and rejection. And we want to come alongside them, but we are thankful today that we have this opportunity to come and share with this committee what God is busy doing. As Reverend Broom was saying, this is people with compassion, and people came from all over the world to come and assist us in a practical way. We've got Ruth also from the UK with us, and she's looking at the structure with one of our industrial psychologists that's also on board, looking at the ministry structure to see that we remain effective and productive, and to see rehabilitation and transformation and a change of heart and mind in the lives of people, not just incarcerated, but also to help our rehabilitators and come alongside them. So we want to do more. We want the prison doors to be open for us more, but because we keep in mind, sir, all the time, safety and security. And I must say, Mr. Mashamba, the manager of Paulsmoor's safety and security office, this ministry's got the best security measurements in place to go into correctional facilities. We can give more account of people coming into our correctional facilities because we screen our people thoroughly, and the churches that send people, they send the best. They send the people that are so much concerned about those in prison. So we want to move to other correctional facilities. So we want to move countrywide. I was in meetings yesterday in terms of restorative justice, looking at the whole country and in all the correctional facilities. It's a major challenge for us to see that it happens, but we start seeing, looking at that, how can we be effective in our correctional facilities. We want to commend you and the Portfolio Committee, sir, for your commitment in terms of seeing that correctional facilities is running as centers of correction. And it is sometimes sad when I hear how you give our officers a hiding, sir, but sometimes they need that, but we are also there to come alongside them. So we are very, very excited to be here today, and we really want to thank you and the team here today, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Pastor. Thank you very much, Pastor John Clayton and the team, the A team. I'm very much impressed. But before that, I want to tell you, Pastor, this is not the last time that you will be here in Parliament. We are going to invite you after the recess to come and greet all of the team. Will get a chance to speak. Because it's very much important, the work that you are doing is very, very much important. And what's your name, sir? Sorry.
Paul.
Paul has said that this task is not a task for both ministries alone, but for all of us. If we really want to address this problem, I am staying in the Free State, but you see, here in the Western Cape, if things are going on here in the West, it also affects me. It affects the whole country. And I fully agree what Paul has said. It's not an issue for both ministries alone, but for everybody. All of us must get involved. in this. But Pastor and the team, we must also address the issue of prevention. That is the challenge. Prevention. That we are not going back to prisons to counsel the people who have offended there, but to tell them before they committed a crime that please don't come in. Then we are going to win this war. But for as long as we are dealing, Pastor, and I know that this is millions of rand. It's volunteer, but it also has, you must have clean clothes and taxi fare and what. It's millions of rand that we can really save millions of rand when we go out there in the community and stop this drug law. Using our feet, like you have said, Pastor. We must start there. Tell the very same people, like my brother here, who is from prison, go out and spread the word. It is not a correct place to be in. And then we are going to win the war. But for as long as, you know, we are, as this portfolio committee, we are always talking about overcrowding. We must come to a point where we are saying, we have addressed it now. And all of us, must help in saying that we are going to address it. It's very painful, Pastor, when one of the delegates was saying that, you know, a young boy is saying, when you ask him, why are you here? I don't know my father. I don't get love from my parents. It's painful to hear that. But you have put a challenge in front of us as well, as lawmakers today, to say we must put more resources into the development and help in addressing this issue of Hope Ministries, all the others. Then I was asked a very relevant question, because I know why she has asked this question. Because she wanted to understand if the Department of Correctional Services is also contributing to the expense of this. Because we are very much worried. We can't do it alone as government. But you, as this group, can really assist. It's really not correct for us to get funds from outside, and we are affected by this problem, and we must contribute to the problem that we are facing in the country. But I really want, on behalf of this portfolio committee, want to express our appreciation. As I said, that it was a short notice. But you are here in numbers. You can see that you are doing this with passion. You are not doing this for the check at the end of the month. We are getting a check at the end of the month. But you are doing it with that passion to really help and save our nation. Because especially here in the Western Cape, you know, I'm so much worried about, you see, you're getting a lot of children here, inside the prison. You know, at one Bonnie's town, a 10-year-old, we were asking him, why are you here? No, I took a TV from one person. 10 years, what is the future of that boy? But through you and through the help of God, we will, because we can't do anything without the guidance and the help of the Almighty. But I also want to wish you everything of the best, and please knock at our doors. When you want to tell us something, please
We are here in Cape Town. We are not here. We are going away now, but we are always here. Please, 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 knock, because we must help. We must be there when you people are also crying. Thank you very much, and everything of the best. We are going now away to the Free School. Thank you very much. Thank you, members. Thank you very much.